Thank you very much. First of all, this has been really fun for me. I'm a mathematician by training, but I'm seeing a lot of things that are similar, but in many ways very different than what I ordinarily work on. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Artin's braid groups and how they appear in two particular ways in terms of counting problems, just straightforward counting. One of the problems has been solved for many years, and one is still unsolved. So there's going to be a homework problem at the end of the lecture. So first I'd like to consider a crude picture of a braid. So this is the number of strands is going to be important. So this is a crude picture of a braid with three strands. It's also called a pure braid. Those are braids that have the property that as these particles move through time, starting at time zero and quitting at time one, they leave the endpoints unpermuted. So there's actually a group that arises here called the braid group. There's a homomorphism to the symmetric group on the number of letters given by the number of strands. In this picture, three particles mill about, but they do not collide. Now, at this point, I want to say there was a striking dichotomy in the kind of things that I play with and the kind of things I've heard people talk about here. Most of the focus seems to be on either a single braid or a single knot and some geometry associated to that. We're going to see that the counting here is kind of more discrete. We're going to look at the space of all braids and try to say something about counting with all braids at once. Okay, so I guess I've gone over that slide. The purpose of this lecture is to illustrate two connections of the braid groups to combinatorially interesting problems. So, we're thinking about a braid as three particles moving through time. I'm writing a braid vertically in contrast to some people here who write them horizontally. You can imagine a locus of three points moving down through time where the points are never allowed to collide. So that's some function space. That's essentially the loop space of a configuration space, as we're going to see in a few moments. So Artin's braid group, the group determined by these n-stranded or k-stranded braids, is generated in a very simple way. Namely, think of a braid that just interchanges the ith and I plus first strand with some fixed direction. Those are Artin's generators of the full braid group. Now I'm just writing down a classical presentation that people obtained early on. The braid group, or the braid group for the plane, is generated by these elements sigma I, which swap the ith and I plus first strand, and they're subject to two very simple relations. One relation says sigma I plus 1, sigma I is sigma I plus 1, sigma I plus 1. And again, you can do this in second grade by just taking some strands and seeing that this relation is satisfied. The other relation is that sigma I and sigma j commute if I and j differ by at least 2. So that's a classical presentation of the full braid group. The braid group is the, did I confuse things?
Yeah, no, it's just that there's a formal set of equations that Randy reminded me of the Yang-Baxter equations.
Right, exactly. Yes, exactly, exactly. But we're going to digress. We're not going to go in that direction, but what you're saying is exactly right. So what's really going on here, in some sense, is looking at the configuration space conf MK consisting of ordered K tuples in a space M, namely the k-fold product, where the ith and jth coordinates are required to be distinct if I is not equal to j. So again, this seems like a very simple topological object. I'm going to say more about this I'm going to focus on this space for a few minutes, because you'll see many of you probably saw some version of this in high school when you started studying polynomials. So I want to focus on this space. The symmetric group on k letters acts on these k-tuples by permuting the k-tuples. So you can imagine thinking of the orbit space, that is the equivalence classes of k-tuples up to permutation. So there's topologically, there's a covering space. You can imagine having k-ordered configurations and then projecting to k-unordered configurations. That's a topological, that's a covering space which has k-factorial sheets. Now, let's look at the special case where M is the complex numbers. So we're just going to focus as an example on ordered configurations in the complex numbers and ordered or unordered configurations in the complex numbers. So we're going to look at both of those. So first, consider the space of all monic polynomials of degree k. So that just means z to the k plus lower terms. And as we all learned, that polynomial over the complex numbers is a product of linear factors. And so I'm going to think of the collection of all of these. So rather than one polynomial, we're going to look at all of them at once. And I'm going to write polynomial sub k to be the collection of all those functions. And now remember, how do you measure whether two are close? Well, two polynomials are close if and only if their coefficients are close. So now we have a very naive object, some space of polynomials that you may have studied in high school. And now by identifying a polynomial with its coefficients, you can think of the space of such polynomials as complex k-space. Namely, every such polynomial has an ordered k-tuple of coefficients. That gives you a point in complex k-space. So the space of all of these complex polynomials is just ck. However, you might identify a polynomial by its roots. So remember, polynomials over the complex numbers factor as linear factors, but the order of the roots are unordered. So now you can imagine thinking of complex k-space modulo the action of permuting these. So this is sometimes called the k-fold symmetric product. And you can think of this space as the space of unordered roots of the polynomial. Well, polynomials are identified either by their coefficients or by their roots. So these two spaces, complex k-space and this symmetric product, are essentially the same topologically. They're essentially the same. And how do you compare those two? How do you compare those? Well, you can imagine thinking of this space of unordered k-tuples of roots and sending the roots to the coefficients. So those are the elementary symmetric functions in the roots. And well, that's an interesting map. In fact, it occupied Galois, who tried to invert that map. So that map, this map from unordered k-tuples, which sends the roots to the coefficients, is a homeomorphism. Galois tried to describe maps that invert that homeomorphism. Well, what we're going to do is now look at configurations, unordered configurations as subspaces of spaces of polynomials. So the configuration space of unordered k-tuples of distinct points is, of course, a subspace of unordered k-tuples, arbitrary k-tuples of complex numbers. This configuration space is precisely the space of monic polynomials of degree k with the property that it has k distinct roots. So we're going to try to study this space a little bit. The fundamental group of this space is just the Braid group. So much of this goes back almost 70 years to Artin. Emil Artin didn't formalize it in this sense, but you can see that he was thinking about it in these terms. Okay. Well, a braid, what's a braid? Well, we're now going to think about braids. And a braid can be thought of as the graph of a loop in the configuration space. In particular, let's go back to that first picture of a braid. You can imagine thinking of a function from the unit interval to the configuration space, where at time zero, the function specifies these initial starting points, and at time t, this function gives you k distinct points in the disk. Well, you can think about that for the plane or the disk or other surfaces. So people have studied the braid group for a surface, which is the fundamental group of this space. So the k-stranded braid group is precisely the fundamental group of this unordered configuration space. So now the main problem that I want to discuss here is a very naive problem. You can try to compare braids for the plane and braids for a two-sphere. I'm going to describe how that works in just a moment, and we're going to end up with a very elementary problem. So the next few sections compare the braid groups for the complex numbers or for the Riemann sphere, where the Riemann sphere, the two-sphere, is regarded as the complex plane union of point at infinity. So there's a picture of the classical Riemann sphere, and now I'm going to try to make a picture of a braid on the Riemann sphere. Oh, sorry, I've skipped ahead a little bit. I first want to look at three configurations in the two-sphere. So these are ordered triples of distinct points in the two-sphere. Now, Poincaré knew what this was. It turns out that this space is PGL2 over the complex numbers on the nose. So these three distinct points on the two-sphere determine a point in PGL2C. In particular, if you start off with a point 0, 1, and infinity in the configuration space and an element in PGL2C or PSL2C, send this point to what the fractional linear transformation does to those three points, that gives you a map to the configuration space. And dating back to Poincaré, this elementary map is a homeomorphism. It's part of the geometry of the configuration space. And in fact, this came up in one of the earlier lectures, essentially. So PGL2C contains the rotation group SO3. And now you can imagine taking three ordered configurations and dividing out by the natural action of the rotation group. And that space is nothing more than one sheet of hyperbolic 3 space. So just to be straight, let me just say what that is. So H3 are one sheet of hyperbolic 3 space given by the locus of points in R4, TXYZ, where T squared minus this quadratic form is equal to 1. Okay? So now what I want to do is start.
So can I ask a physicist question?
Yep.
So if you go back.
Yep.
So
How far?
Here, PSL2C is the same as Lorentz group, right?
Right.
So if you're modding out by SO3, that's the radial rotations, and what's left over are the three boosts.
Right, and so and topologically,
yeah.
Topologically, what's left over is one sheet of hyperbolic three space, and there's a formula. I'll write it down afterwards. It's essentially given by quadratic polynomials. That this is all classical.
And the reason boosts form groups levels.
Right, and the boosts are just hyperbolic rotations rather than.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. 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 So now here are these very naive things, complex plane configurations in the two-sphere, and I'm basically going to spend the next 20 or 30 minutes posing a homework problem about these spaces. Okay. Now, suppose you look at K configurations in the two-sphere. Well, SO3 acts on K configurations by rotating all three at once. That's the so-called diagonal action. And now you could ask about the orbit space. What is the space of orbits modulo the SO3 action? And to a topologist, this is a product space. There's a misprint here. This should be H upper 3. This is that one sheet of hyperbolic 3 space crossed K minus 3 configuration, so K is at least 3 here, in the two-sphere punctured 3 times. The points 0, 1, and infinity are removed. So again, this is an elementary exercise, but it's just trying to describe how some of these configurations are probably familiar to you. Okay, now. There's a three-stranded braid on the two-sphere. So how do you get a three-stranded braid? Think of this outer picture as a two-sphere, and think of the two-sphere crossed an interval where you're moving from the outer sphere to the inner sphere through time. So all this is doing is starting off with some particles on the outer sphere and moving them through time toward the inner sphere, where the particles have to occupy the same sphere at the same time, and they all have to be distinct. So there's this obvious notion of what braids on the two-sphere are. Now, there's a map from the braid group for the plane to the braid group for the Riemann sphere. I'm going to draw a picture of this in a moment. And again, this picture is probably something you would have seen in second grade if you drew pictures of braids. A picture of this is as follows. So you can imagine starting off with this braid that we saw earlier and then just putting this in a solid torus. And now that gives you a braid in the two-sphere. Gives you a braid in the two-sphere. So there's a natural map, this obvious map, from braids in the plane to braids in the two-sphere. So I'm going to write it formally as the map from the K-stranded braid group for the plane to the K-stranded braid group for the two-sphere. And in that previous example, we're just looking at a three-stranded braid in the plane and sending it to a three-stranded braid in the two-sphere. Now, in the next slide, I've goofed up. This function from the K-stranded braid group on the plane to the K-stranded braid group on the two-sphere certainly does have a kernel, but that's not what I'm interested in. I want to know whether, well, this map is a surjection of groups. It's onto. It's very easy to see that braids on the two-sphere are generated by twisting two adjacent strands. So I don't really want to go through that. But you can imagine asking similar questions for subgroups of the braid group. And that's what I want to do next. I want to describe how this naive homomorphism arises in a problem that, well, actually, Poincaré first considered. So I'm going to say how some things fit together. So the way
explain what that question means. So you want to show?
I'm going to explain how and why this map is interesting.
So you want to show that if you have a braid on the plane, that then you can make it that you get every possible braid on the sphere.
Right. So what happens is, let me just say, let's go back to these. You can imagine putting those in the two sphere. And it's an exercise that we could do if you want, that these stuck in the two sphere in the way that we described earlier generates all of the braids in the two sphere. So these simple-minded braids generate all the braids in the two sphere. Okay. So now I want to look at this naive homomorphism. And again, I've just remarked that map is onto. Well, what I want to do next is introduce the Borromean rings, which have come up here in different contexts. So I'm sure everybody here knows the Borromean rings very well. These are three link copies of S1 with the property that if you omit any S1, then the other two pull apart. So now I want to look at the notion of Borromean braids. So I'm going to illustrate this in just a moment. There are people who call this Brunian braids. I don't understand the word Brunian, so I've taken the liberty of using Borromean. All right? So we're going to look at the Borromean K-stranded braid group for a surface. So Bor K just means those K-stranded braids on a surface which have the property that if you delete anyone, then the braid falls apart. So are there any of these, first of all? Well, let's look at that picture. That looks like a braid in the plane. Everybody buys that. And this also looks like a Borromean braid to me if I got it straight. So if you delete the third strand, what's left is clearly trivial. If you delete the first strand, then you can imagine taking this little lip and pulling it over here, and then taking this second lip and pulling it over here, so the braid becomes trivial. And similarly, if you omit the second strand, I think you can see that if you pull it around, you get the trivial braid. So there's a naive, trivial braid, Borromean braid. This braid has come up in several previous lectures here. In particular, suppose you think of the Markov closing construction, which takes the top of this braid and glues it to the bottom in this order, then the braid closure of this particular braid is the Borromean rings. So it corresponds exactly to that picture that we saw earlier. Well, now you can imagine asking, what is the Borromean braid group? And that turns out to be relatively easy to answer. In fact, in the 1800s, Felix Klein identified one of them. So the Borromean K-stranded braid group for a surface is usually, not always, but is usually a countably infinitely generated free group. So Red Miller was talking about ways of naming knots or links or braids. You might try to name the elements in this Borromean braid group. And one of the questions you end up with is trying to count partitions of integers. Counting partitions of integers looks like an easy exercise, but in fact gives you a modular form in an interesting way. So just trying to count Borromean braids is not a completely trivial task.
You have another look at that braid?
Pardon me?
You have another look at that braid?
K=3?
Can you go back for just another look at a braid?
So let me say more about that.
I want to see it again.
Okay.
I don't think it's right.
I don't think it's
right. That, so K is at least 4 here.
I think your braid gives you the unlimited.
Wait, this, the previous one? That one? So, let's see, the braid closure, you think, let's see.
Certainly not. I mean, Borromean rings is alternating.
So, I may have twisted it up. I think it was right, but let's do that after, okay? Thank you. I was trying to get the Borromean rings, but I may have goofed. It turns out one of them is the Borromean rings, and it's the first interesting one. So let's look at one small example. So this is the four-stranded Borromean braid group for the two-sphere. So again, what you're looking at are four strands on the two-sphere, which become trivial. And it turns out this goes back to roughly 1860. So you can imagine looking at SL2 over the integers. So those are the 2x2 matrices over the integers of determinant +1. And now you could look at the subgroup generated by those matrices whose mod 4 reduction is the identity. And it turns out by some accident, or maybe it's not an accident, there's a natural map of the braid group to SL2, which carries the Borromeans to exactly this subgroup. So it may or may not be familiar, but it's a natural group and it's reasonably big. Okay, so why are these Borromean braid groups so interesting? Why have I been trying to ask a question about Borromean braids, which are just these huge countably infinitely generated free groups? Well, that's what we're going to look at. We're going to look at, again, this map from Borromean braids and the complex numbers to Borromean braids in the two-sphere, and what's going to happen in some work that John Barrick, Yan-Lai Wang, Ji Wu, and I did over 10 years ago. So I'm not lecturing on a new theorem. One of the theorems is going to be new, but this is an old theorem, which I thought might fit with some of the interests here. This map turns out to not be a surjection. So on the level of ordinary braids, it's a surjection. But it turns out not to be a surjection on the level of Borromean braids. I'm going to talk about that map a little bit. So, this is the first theorem. Assume that the number of strands is at least 5. Then the image of the Borromean K-stranded braid group for the complex numbers, the Borromean K-stranded braid group for the two-sphere, has image which is a normal subgroup. So you could quotient out by the image. And the theorem is that the quotient group is the K minus first homotopy group of the two-sphere. Now, what does that mean? What is the K minus first homotopy group of the two-sphere? This means you start off with a sphere of dimension K minus 1, where K is pretty big. And then you look at the homotopy classes of maps of this big dimensional sphere to the two-sphere. The homotopy classes of such maps are precisely what the quotient of the Borromean K-stranded braids on the two-sphere is, modulo the image of the Borromeans for the plane. Now, why is this interesting? Well, homotopy groups come up in many contexts. People have spent many years trying to compute with these things, and they're not so easy to compute. In fact, they're largely not very well understood. People know a little bit about them, and I'm going to say, make a few remarks about this. Well, what I want to say, first of all, is that this result about Borromean braids seems to be completely useless for computation. So one of the homework problems is, does it make any sense to give some structure or some geometric information about this group? In particular, there's a theorem of Jean-Pierre Serre in his thesis, which proves that pi k minus 1 of the 2-sphere is a finite group. It's a finite group as long as k minus 1 is bigger than 3. So what this is telling you is that the Borromean k-stranded braids for the plane have image in the Borromean k-stranded braids for the 2-sphere, which is a finite index. It's just a sequence of finite numbers. So when k minus 1 is 4, this group turns out to have 2 elements. When it's 5, it has 2 elements. When it's 6, it has 12 elements. When it's 7, it has 2 elements. Is there some physical meaning for this? I mean, there are these sequence of integers which give you the size of these groups. They're hard as the dickens to compute.
For six, it's 12.
Right, pi 6 of S2 is Z12. And it's very hard to make a picture of a braid that represents that generator of Z12. It's not hard to make a picture for a Z2 in that. I better not go there. So is there some physical meaning or some geometric meaning about these finite numbers? They're counting some very elementary property of braids. A little bit more is known about this. So I'm going to write this. So this is not good notation. I just want to warn people that this quotient means Borromean K-stranded braids modulo the image. So you might think it's actually the quotient. The Borromean K-stranded braids in the plane is not a subgroup. This is supposed to denote the image. So for large K, these are finite abelian groups. By using some completely different type of work, it's not hard to see that in these finite abelian groups, you may have infinitely many Z mod 2 Zs or Z mod 4 Zs, but there are no Z mod 8 Zs. There are no Z mod 16s. So there's something about the braids that are somehow forcing the orders of these things to be small. And then if you look at the odd primary torsion, like 3 torsion or 5 torsion, there are infinitely many elements of order 3, but there are no elements of order 9. Can you say something about the reason for that using the geometry of braids?
Sorry, could you just say what it means for an element to have torsion?
To have order 2?
Torsion.
It means that if you fix this element alpha, it means that some non-zero multiple of alpha is 0. So think of the integers mod n times the integers. That means that every element in there has order at most n. And so what happens in any of these quotients, you have, there may be elements of prime order, order p, but there are no elements of order p squared.
So you already gave an example. For k equals 6, there's an element of 4 torsion.
Right.
The first one was 8
Right, so there's an element of order 4 when k is equal to 6, but there are no elements of order 8. There are infinitely many elements of order 4. That's exactly right. So the geometry of the braid has to be somehow hiding this, but it's the geometry of all the braids. Again, this question may be inappropriate, but this seemed like a good audience for such a question. Okay, now, I want to talk about something in maybe...
So you're now going k bigger than 5. If k equals 4, you're identifying...
That's pi 3 of S2,
right,
which is... generated by the Hopf map.
You identified a particular group, namely the congruent subgroup, the 4-level congruent
right.
subgroup. And that was with, just remind me, that was with 4.
Right, so that happens in the following way. The mapping class group for a genus 1 surface for the torus is SL2Z. There's a classical map of the braid group to the mapping class group given by Dane twists. And now if you, that map extends to a map of the braid group for the two sphere. And it turns out when you look at the Borromean four-stranded braids, that's exactly, right, it's exactly what Felix Klein calculated.
I know where to go with that, but I'm not doing it right now.
So this is an accident. It basically comes from the fact that the symmetric group on 4 letters maps onto the symmetric group on 3 letters. And this is kind of a lifted version. It's a fact that the 4-stranded braid group maps to the 3-stranded braid group, and then you horse around with that. Did I answer your question? So here's the kind of final statement about how you, one way to compare Borromean braids. So again, here are these natural, simple-minded objects. How do you compare them? Well, the theorem is that you could consider the K-stranded Borromean braids for the plane. Consider that map that we looked at earlier in the talk, induced by just adding a point at infinity in the complex numbers. So it turns out that there's a map from the Borromean K-stranded braids to the K-1st homotopy group of the two-sphere. The kernel of this, is the image of this map. And this map has a kernel, which happens to be the Borromean K+1-stranded braids on the two-sphere. So these Borromean braids are hiding some combinatorial things that people have tried hard to calculate for many years. And again, I can't emphasize too strongly that this kind of theorem at the moment does not tell you anything at all about the size of these groups or what these groups are.
What's the map from K plus one on the two-sphere?
So let's go back. So we almost gave that map. So if you consider K configurations in the two-sphere, think of this as K plus 1. So that would make this K minus 2. And K minus 2 configurations in the plane punctured twice crossed a circle is homotopy equivalent to K configurations in the plane. So there's a little algebraic fiddle. There's actually a map of spaces that's realizing this. There's a map of K plus 1 configurations in the two-sphere to K configurations in the plane that involves essentially a twisting an S1. I think I'd be happier about putting that down on paper.
Is it a little bit like taking one of these strands and identifying it with the point at infinity at every single
Yes. Good. And so what that does, it takes k plus 1 configurations and gives you k in the complement of the point at infinity. That's
projecting through the strand.
Sure.
Right. So that's exactly what this map is doing, these Borromean k plus 1 stranded braids to the Borromean k stranded braids. So all of these are, these natural subgroups are fitting together in a way that would be interesting to understand. Okay, now this is a combinatorial problem involving braids that has not been solved. I want to make a completely wild suggestion that if you keep track of the size of these, so think of these groups, these are some finite groups, count the orders and divide by k factorial, and then think of the formal generating function associated to that. You might ask whether that has any sort of natural symmetry properties with respect to PSL2Z or PSL2C. And I want to say that there's some actual motivation for doing this. When you actually try to calculate these things, so there are ways to try to do that by counting. And the kind of counting you have to do is a kind of glorified version of the classical partition function. And one feature of the classical partition function is that its 12th power is a modular form. So it leads you naturally to ask this question. Well, it turns out that modular forms come up again in another way with these, which may or may not be an accident. So what I'm going to do, I guess I still have about 10 minutes.
Modular form is something that transforms nicely under the Möbius action.
Exactly. And now it turns out that these come up in a slightly different context, but again, in a natural way. And I want to describe what happens in that setting. So we've already talked about this. And again, I want to emphasize that my friends who compute these groups are not happy with this kind of information because it doesn't actually tell you about the structure of the homotopy groups. So it's telling you something possibly about the group theory, but who knows? Who knows? Okay. All right. Now I want to go back to a classical map that from the 2G plus 2 stranded braid group for the plane to the symplectic group over the integers. So there's a classical map that essentially goes back to Riemann, which gives a function from the braid group to the mapping class group, the group of path components of the diffeomorphism group of a surface of genus G. And then this composite is just asking what a braid does to the first homology group of a surface. Now, a natural question is to ask about the cohomology of the braid group with coefficients in symmetric powers of this representation. So, for folks who don't like cohomology, this is one way you might try to tweeze apart different braids. They're not as good as the Jones polynomial, but they're a way to tweeze apart certain braids. That's one of the reasons you might try to understand this. And so I want to give one answer, which turned out recently to work out in a way that's a little bit accidental. So there's a misprint here. This should have been SL2 over the integers. So I goofed it up. This should have been SL2 over Z. That's a quotient of the third braid group. It's a quotient modulo a copy of the integers sitting in the third braid group. And so I want to answer this question for SL2 rather than the braid group itself. You can answer it for the braid group, but I just want to say what happens, because it, well, it struck me as being interesting and perhaps fitting with what some of the things people here were saying. So it turns out that the cohomology of this group breaks apart as a direct sum of two abelian groups. One I'm going to call M, and one I'm going to call the torsion. Okay, so it splits into two pieces. One is torsion free, so it's just some bunch of copies of the integers. And the other is some torsion group, which might have some copies of Z mod 2Z or Z mod 4Z or Z mod 9Z. It's what?
Is N finite rank greater
than these groups?
Is N finite rank greater
than this turns out to be an isomorphism. And in fact, these are not finitely generated. They're not finitely generated, but this actually is equal. So this is a torsion-free bunch of copies of the integers, and this is a torsion group. It turns out that this part was first considered by Goro Shimura in the early 1950s. And here's what the answer is. Sorry, let me just skip ahead. So if you take this this little bit that corresponds to the third braid group and maybe replace the braid group by SL2 as a first approximation, what you end up with is some abelian group, which when you tensor with the real numbers, is the classical ring of modular forms based on the SL2Z action on the upper half plane. So it's basically these holomorphic maps which have a certain invariance property. And now, so that's a classical thing, and that's something that is really a remark about the calculation. You knew ahead of time that this had to be there. But now there's this other piece. There's this other piece. And that turns out to accidentally correspond to something that topologists had discovered some years ago for completely different reasons. In particular, it turns out, I guess this is maybe too topological, but it turns out there are fibrations. So they're not quite fiber bundles, they're fibrations over the loop space of the 2n plus 1 sphere with the 2n minus 1 sphere. And these the feature of these fibrations is that they inform on the structure of the homotopy groups of spheres. It turns out that the torsion in the homotopy groups of spheres can't grow very quickly. It's bounded. And the theorem is that if you do this calculation for the third braid group, what you end up with is getting something whose cohomology is a product of these two fibrations. Now, why is that happening? I guess what I wanted to do is say the last homework problem is to explain this accident. Why does this algebraic property suddenly arise bounding torsion in homotopy groups when this process seems so far removed? And so what I'm basically asking is, you know, folks here know quite a bit about the geometry of braids. Perhaps there's a geometric reason for these computations. Thank you very much.
So you kind of hinted in the case of four braids, the mapping class group of the torus came in.
Yes. So in the others, it's the so for the 2G plus second braid group or less, there are natural maps to the of the braid group on at most 2G plus two strands.
Do you have a hint why the Z mod 12 in the 6-RNA approaching is related to the GS?
I mean, that's something that my friends and I have thought about off and on a lot, and we just don't know enough about the braid group to say anything. There's something about six strands that's different. Oh, and I should say, there's a mild variation that I didn't want to talk about in here that works for any sphere. So in this process, we talked about braids for the two sphere. There's a variation that's keeping track of homotopy groups of any sphere involving the braid groups. But again, you cannot, or people, the methods for computing that people had just don't fit very well with this notion of Brunian braids.
So can you give us some generators for this Brunian braid group? In terms of the generators.
So what happens, so there's a natural way to try to understand the Borromean braids. So let's, what are those? Those are loosely the braids which arise by deleting any strand. A formal way to say that is that the braid, the pure braid group is the fundamental group of K ordered configurations in the plane. And now there's a projection map from K configurations to K minus 1, which say deletes the last configuration. And the theorem is that that's a projection map in a fibration. With fiber, the plane punctured K minus 1 times. And now what that fundamental group is, so those are the braids that are generated by those pure braids, which take the last strand and wrap it around the first or the second. So it turns out now if you look at those and delete the penultimate strand, you get something that's closer to Borromean. And in fact, what happens is if you delete the N minus first strand, what you end up with is a map from the free group generated by AN1 up to ANN minus 1 to the free group generated by the first N minus 2 of them. So you're just forgetting. You're just forgetting one generator. This is something you think you could work out easily. It turns out you can using covering spaces. The kernel of that projection map turns out to be a huge free group generated essentially by iterated commutators, and saying what they are essentially involves choices of partitions. I'm not sure I'm saying this in a way that makes any sense. But let me just continue. So you can imagine doing the first projection, working out the kernel, taking the second projection, and trying to understand the kernel restricted to the first kernel. Keep going. That's in fact how you end up studying what the Borromeans are. They end up being some successive sequence of kernels that you can understand by essentially elementary covering space theory. And I mean, the answers that you get turn out to have some geometric meaning. They in fact correspond, some of them correspond to Borromean end-stranded links under the closing construction. And I thought I had written down the right one for the Borromean, actually the Borromean rings, but maybe I've goofed up.
So is there a paper or a book?
So there was, let me just say that this paper relating braids in the plane and braids in the two-sphere is a paper that John Barrick, Yan Loi Wang, Ji Wu, and I wrote. It probably appeared about 5 years ago. But this thing about counting Borromean braids is in an unpublished paper that dates back to about 2000. I probably should try to post it somewhere. So I'm mildly uncomfortable in the sense that the stuff seems like a potentially interesting curiosity, but nobody is real. There hasn't been motivation in some ways to post some of these things because it doesn't really answer questions that come up in the subject that I grew up with. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question again.
Yeah, it could be a nice accident. Someone has some nice representations of something in the brain.
Right, right. No, it's worth, yeah, for sure. So again, what this is doing is not focusing on individual braids, knots, or links. It's focusing on all of them. What that all of them are telling you are some interesting combinatorial type questions that people have studied for a long time.
I think you've used the method of exhaustion. It's not a problem. Questions for
thank you.